We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Hey, good morning. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyer is All Things Legal. You can give us a call at 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. Got Albert Nico this morning. Good morning.
Hey, I got Doug Sinceri this morning,
That's right. It's a rainy morning. It was good to hear the weather forecast is going to dry up, I guess, for the parade.
Yeah.
Because when I woke up, I'm thinking, there's not going to be any parades.
Well, I heard there would be rain through the night, but I didn't know it was going to last this long. So, but that's okay. I guess it's 8 o'clock. We're up a lot earlier than some of the parade goers, I would think.
Yes, absolutely.
But
so looks like they'll run. Yeah. And man, this is we're sort of into. Did you watch Pelicans Friday night? They played Oklahoma City.
I did. You know they played good enough to win. I mean, you know, Drew gets the ball a lot late and has been for the last few years, even when AD was on the team. And he either shows up or he doesn't show up. And two games ago, he showed up.
Against Indiana.
Yeah, scored 13 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And last game, he you know, missed a couple of threes at the end, you know, was 1-for-4 from the free throw line. And that's kind of been the bad rap on him. I love him. I think he's a great player. You want him on your team. One of the best, probably maybe the best defensive player in the NBA. But he's just inconsistent. He's got to get more consistency in his 3-point shot and just free throws. I mean, just good players make free throws consistently, you know. And
well, you know, Michelle's like, if the Pelicans on, she says, do you want to watch it or do you want to do something else? I said, look, we'll tune in with about 7 minutes ago. We'll probably be tied, which is probably 75% of the time true.
Yeah.
So it's the last 7 minutes.
I do love their energy. You know, Josh Hart's just stepped up. He's played like a, you know, a Tasmanian devil out there, just chasing every ball, getting rebounds. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of stuff's contagious, I think. And what I love to see is when somebody makes a shot, everybody on the bench is cheering them on. These are young guys. They're not jaded. They're not those.
They got a good nucleus.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I like Lonzo Ball as a point guard. He distributes fantastic.
He throws it away a lot. He makes bad passes.
He's only 21 years old.
I don't care, but he throws the ball away a lot. They're bad. They're just, you know what's a good pass and what's not a good pass.
And Josh, he
tries to make these passes that they shouldn't make.
Josh Hart is a great sixth man.
Oh yeah, no, he's.
And then Brandon Ingram's having a breakout year.
Yeah.
And Derek Favors is very important to that team because he's their rim protector.
I think they need to
re-sign him.
Well, but they need to play Okafor a lot more because he's solid. He's solid.
Yeah, they don't play him.
They don't play him enough.
And I love
Jackson. You know, but kid catches the ball and looks away from the rim. And so he's got to be able to be aggressive, try to get to the rim, try to score, because otherwise his defender's playing home run. And so you know, nobody can drive to the basket because they're not guarding him.
But I mean, if you take them when they were, I think, 6-22, they're playing way over 500 since they had that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they had that big stretch.
And they all right. Well, we got Justin calling about the Sewage and Water Board class action suit. I do know a little bit about this. Hey, Justin, you and All Things Legal with Doug Sinceri and Albert Nico. Justin.
Good morning, Doug and Albert. How y'all doing?
We're awesome.
Great.
How you doing, Justin?
Shout out to Michelle. I'm doing well. Shout out to Michelle, too. She's great, too.
Yes.
Well, this doesn't involve me personally, but this involves a friend of mine.
Are you calling for a friend, huh?
I am. Well, yeah. She's too shy to call on the phone. Anyway, she lives in the uptown area that was affected by the SWB jackhammering and shaking her building. And she documented every damage to her house.
Yes.
And she has her own contractor, her own lawyer. The SWB and their lawyer just came over last week to film everything and check everything out.
Right. There's a hotline. Here's what you can do. There's a hotline with the Sewage and Water Board that when you have damage, you can call and they will open up a claim. After they open up the claim, they will have forensics take a look at it, and they try to determine, you know, what damage was caused by the work that was performed by the Sewage and Water Board. Now, here's the issue. There's two issues to this. The first issue from Sewage and Water Board's perspective is they want to determine whether the damage to the house, because a lot of these houses are a couple, 100 years old, is uptown, is whether the damage was due to the work that was performed by Sewage and Water Board, or it was due to the fact that New Orleans is built on a swamp and it has in settlement. And
I agree with that. But having said that, I think if the Sewage Water Board had not done that hard jackhammering, the damage to her house would have been minimal. So I think I blame the SWB. Well, my question is, because I want to keep you on the line.
No, that's all right. We got as much time as you need.
My question is that when the judge rules a settlement in that person's favor, how come it takes so long for them to get the payment?
Because they're a government entity, and a government entity is when you sue.
Well, there's insurance though, not a ton.
Not a ton, but not enough to pay all these claims.
Right.
Let me give you an example. If you get a judgment against Walmart, and they don't want to pay, theoretically, you can start seizing assets of Walmart. Okay. You know, you could start seizing bank accounts, assets to satisfy your judgment. Or if they sue an individual who's got assets, has assets, you can sue that person and have the sheriff seize those assets to satisfy the judgment. The problem with government is when you get a judgment against government, and I'm speaking this broadly, you can't go seize the Capitol or the City Hall and say, I want to seize... sees that to satisfy my judgment. Ask the firemen who've had judgments against the city of New Orleans for 20 years for millions and millions of dollars. When a government entity does not allow or you're unable to seize their assets, now you can get appropriations. There's a lot more to do. But right now, I think the city of New Orleans probably has $100 million of judgments against them for the last 20, 25 years. And every once in a while, they'll have a judgment sale where they say, we'll pay 5 cents on the dollar and waive the interest if you want it. So the Sewage and Water Board, you know, you can't go and seize the pump stations to have your judgment satisfied. So it's going to be based on an appropriation or some other action to fund the settlements. But there's no way you can compel the settlements that the Sewage and Water Board doesn't have the money or doesn't want to pay it at that particular time. And that's the problem. In fact, a lot of lawyers will never take a case against the city of New Orleans, this one included, because even if you get a judgment against the city of New Orleans, you may never receive payment on it for years and years. And if you do, they'll say, we got all these judgments out here. We'll pay you, 5, 10, 15% on the judgment. So that's the problem. Sewage and Water Board's a quasi-governmental agency, and there's no enforcement mechanism to collect your judgment because the assets of the government is not subject to seizure to satisfy your judgment.
That's a shame. That's really a shame.
Yeah, and that's how it works. I mean, people will call us, look, I want to file suit against the city, and we're like, good luck, go find you a lawyer to do it because – it takes forever and get it. You got to get in line. You got to get, and they'll defend it and they'll pay their lawyers and do whatever. And you go get your judgment and spend a lot of time, money, and effort. And,
every once in a while, like if you'd sue maybe, I'm not going to use a parish here because I don't want to get in, like Calcasieu Parish. Mm-hmm. So nobody will get mad at me. They may say, let's say you have a legitimate suit against Calcasieu Parish and maybe they are all well funded. They may say, okay, we understand the value of your lawsuit's $300,000, but we're not going to pay it. And go get an appropriation from a legislator, or we'll pay it when we want to, and we'll not deal with it when we, you know, until then. Or you could take $150,000 right now. That's what a lot of municipalities do to negotiate down the value of a judgment. You know, Department of Transportation and Development, a lot of agencies. So you have a little different dynamics in suing a governmental agency than you would a private insurer or a private corporation, because they have a certain amount of insulation, or I'm not going to use the word immunity in a true sense word, but they have the ability to string, you know, not pay the judgment or make it very difficult to collect on the judgment. And they use that fact to negotiate down the value of the claim. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. So the old adage that says you can't fight City Hall is true.
In some ways, yes. In that case, yes. In some ways. All right.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you, Justin. Appreciate it. Let's go to Ken. He's got a call regarding a siblings that inherited a home. In fact, that's what I wanted to talk about today.
There you go.
Hey, Ken, you on All Things Legal with Doug Cinceri and Albert Nico.
Actually, my wife and her brother inherited a home, and we're going to fix it up to sell it. And we were referred to a local bank to get a loan for that, and they approved the loan, but they want us to form an LLC to make it a commercial loan. And my question is, it's inheritance, so there was going to be no taxes on it. It's already gone through succession and everything. But if we form an LLC, and then when we sell the home, are we going to have corporate taxes?
No.
Well, it depends what the home was listed for in the judgment of possession.
Yeah, but
so if you listed it for $100,000 and you're going to go turn it in and sell it for $200,000, then you're going to have a $100,000 cost basis, regardless.
Right.
And then you're going to put, and if you sell it for $200,000, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on that $100,000.
But I think they were doing that so they could get the loan. Are y'all going to do any renovations on the house?
Yeah, that's the purpose of the loan. We're only going to do about, you know, but the $30,000 to $40,000 of renovations to get a better price on the house.
But the renovations could be added to your cost basis also.
Sure.
So you're
saying that if the house in the appraisal, I mean, in the succession, whatever it was valued at, anything above that we sell it for, we pay taxes?
Less, like Doug said,
whatever you put into it. I'll put it to you this way. It doesn't matter whether you'd have it in an LLC or individually, you'd still pay the same tax if you had any taxes to pay.
Right.
So I wouldn't change it if we formed an LLC.
Right.
So it would not change it. So,
yeah, because you know the assumption is the value of that property was the same going into the LLC as it was when you got it. And so whether, you know, at some point you're going to have to pay the difference. And the game used to be when there were inheritance taxes and we had a, you know, we had
$600,000
exemption. Yeah, $600,000 exemption.
Debt taxes for the city and
Louisiana,
state.
Everybody had them. The game was, okay, we have this range for what this house might be worth. Let's say it's worth $200,000 to $250,000.
Let's put it low.
Exactly. Let's put it low, and then that way we don't have to pay all these taxes to the government and everything else. But the problem is when you turn around and sell it, you got capital gains. Now you don't have Louisiana state inheritance taxes.
Our city. And then you got a
$10 million or so exemption, $11 million exemption per person on your federal estate taxes. So you don't have that to pay. So now the game is let's go to the higher end of the range, you know, that's acceptable when you put a value on the house in the judgment of possession.
I wasn't involved in succession. So whatever it was valued at in succession,
right?
Anything we make above that minus our expenses,
correct?
We pay taxes.
Right, there you go.
That is your
and
cost.
They're going to be. Is it different that they're corporate taxes? No.
You can get an LLC with the S corp designation.
Or just like a partnership.
Sure. Either one. No, it's no difference because it's in the LLC. It'll have no difference on your taxes.
Yeah.
The other thing I read online was that doing the LLC keeps the loan off of your personal credit report.
Well, I can tell you that if they're going to lend you the money,
they're going to make you personally guarantee it.
They're going to make you personally guarantee it. So you're going to
Oh, yeah. Well, we've already done that.
Then you're personally liable for it.
It's kind of ridiculous. The house, I mean, I don't even know why we need this because we're borrowing a small amount of money compared to the value of the house.
Because they're banks.
Look, the banks want to protect their assets as much as they can. So if you know,
so we're okay then. This LLC.
Yeah, and then the other thing too with the LLC, there are going to be some costs and expenses that you're going to incur with that. Not much, but some, and then those can be written off as an expense of the company as well.
Just okay, cost of filing taxes. So
I got you.
All right, Ken.
All right, you're good. You're good. Good luck on your renovation and selling the house. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief time out. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your Weekend Lawyers. You know, I guess, first of all, if you tell a millennial that the city of New Orleans had death taxes in the state of Louisiana, they'd say, you're kidding. Because that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But that's when we started. They had it. They had it. I think they got rid of it, I think,
around 1990. Well, my daughter is 24. And she's either is or isn't. She's like the last year of the millennials. And I was watching an episode of Cheers last night, and she had no idea. No,
nothing about Sam Malone?
No Sam Malone. No Norm. You know, none of that.
Oh, man.
But the Netflix has it. And so you can watch, you know, you can binge watch it if you want. Speaking of Netflix, I was watching The Pharmacist. Did you see that by any chance?
Do you know anything
about it?
No, nothing.
You have Netflix?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So The Pharmacist is about this St. Bernard Parish pharmacist who, you know, he and his wife talked about their two kids, the son and their daughter, videos of them growing up, you know, seemed like the typical ordinary, you know, happy mm-hmm. family. Well, the son at age 17 or so goes into the Ninth Ward to buy drugs and gets shot and killed. And so this guy had this mission whereby he was going to find out, because the cops in New Orleans were like, look, he went in the Ninth Ward, you know, pretty much he deserved what he got. He knew he shouldn't have been in there. You don't go in there at middle of the night.
That was in the show. That was the attitude in the show.
No, but that's what the cops said.
So that's what they told him.
Right,
right.
This was before Katrina, like 2000 or so. So he starts interviewing people, walking the neighborhood, you know, and they interview, and it was a documentary. And so he's trying to find the killer. He recorded everybody. He's got cassette tapes and everything else. Well, then they get into that, and then they get into this person, Jacqueline Cleggett, who was an MD who had a pill mill and got convicted, but she had a pill mill on Chef Highway.
Okay.
And so he started getting into that, how everybody, no matter what, it opened at like 10 p.m. at night. And they had, had a New Orleans policeman out there, and like people were just.
It's based on a true story?
This was a documentary. Yeah,
wow.
It was excellent. But it's just very local, and it hits home, and how this guy just kept after it, and nobody wanted it. The FBI didn't want it. Look, this is a doctor. She's writing scripts. We're not doctors. We don't know. And he just kept getting every excuse, you know. And then finally they busted her. Yeah.
Wow.
Called The Pharmacist. So we were going to watch an episode a night. It's about an hour apiece, four episodes.
Four episodes?
We went 7:30 to 11:30. Aaron and I watched all four episodes. Yeah,
we binged it.
It was great. We binged it.
Now, I don't know how to transition from that to this, but I'll bridge it anyway. We had a call talking about inheriting property.
Mm-hmm.
And we had something happen to this, which was tragic, absolutely tragic. But they had a lady whose children are grown,
mm-hmm.
Her husband had just died. And I think she'd been married 30, 40, 40 some odd years.
Mm-hmm.
And her and the children have a little difficulty in some difficulties with extended family. And she had called and said, we inherited a house early in our marriage, and we've been living there for 40 years.
He inherited or she inherited?
He inherited a house. The deceased husband inherited a house for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the children now own it.
Right.
And she had said that her husband had died. So you're dealing with one tragedy.
Right.
Your husband dying.
Right.
Who you've been married to a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming off that tragedy.
And the two children were their children?
Were their children.
Okay.
And then the two children are in their own grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
And also, every family has issues. When you do estate work like we do, they ain't no Brady Bunch around.
Yeah.
Where everybody's sitting around holding hands. There's always some underlying family dynamics that you have to deal with in addition to splitting up the property.
Right.
There's something where, you know, someone's still mad that someone kicked them, threw them off the spring 50 years ago and they hadn't forgiven them.
Mm-hmm.
And they want retribution. Or it's just something.
Sure.
There's usually stuff going on. And she was very distraught about her husband dying. And then she got a double whammy when she found out her kids want her out of the house. And she has no rights to stay in the house right now because
none.
The husband died without a will.
Right.
So he had said, she told me, my husband died without a will.
But he wanted me to stay in the house.
He wanted me to stay in the house.
Right.
And he didn't, and we inherited the house. And so it was.
Well, he inherited.
He inherited the house, the house from his mother, his mm-hmm. parents. There was no mortgage on it, so they inherited free and clear. So there's not even reimbursements for payment of mortgages.
Right, right.
And that Katrina came, they redid the house, but they redid the house with insurance money.
Yeah.
So there's no enhancement.
Right.
And she's saying, 40 years later, I've lost my husband, and now my kids are kicking me out of a house.
I had the same situation with a guy who, you know, same kind of deal. Like, he raised two of the kids because they had been married for so long, but it was her house from a previous marriage. And there was a small, I mean, like $6,000 or $7,000 worth of reimbursement from the, because mm-hmm. it was paid off shortly after they were married. And she told them, like, they were all in the room together. And she said, I want him to live here until he dies. And like, yeah, mama, okay, sure, sure, sure. She dies, we want you out. And he called me, he's like, can they do that? I'm like, yeah, if she wants you in the house, that is her separate property. It is not community property. And if, and what she has to do is a child is a more favored heir than a spouse when it comes to separate property. There's no usufruct. There's no anything having to do with separate property. So now community property without a will, you know, it goes to the children in naked ownership, but there's a usufruct in favor of the wife by operation of law.
And just
but with separate property, there's not.
Just for the people in Bucktown, it's naked ownership.
Naked ownership, exactly.
But anyway, which I'm included.
Yeah.
So again, and she asked me. I mean, she's heartbroken. I mean, you lose your husband, you're losing your house.
Right.
And she was more of a traditional mom.
Yeah, never worked, all that sort of thing.
So she's got to go out and make a living now to put a roof over her head.
Yeah.
With very little vocational training.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me. And this was...
Well, was there any community property? Were there accounts? Was there any...
No, sort of a paycheck to paycheck.
Uh-huh.
He was paycheck to paycheck. I'll leave it at that. And what she asked me, and this was injury, what, insult on top of injury? Is that mm-hmm. what
insult to injury?
Insult to injury. On top of that, she says, well, what could have been done so that I kept the house?
Yeah.
And I said, all your husband had to do is do a will and give you a usufruct where you get used to the house for the remainder of your life.
Right.
And you'd have been done.
Simple.
And she's like, how much would that have cost? I said,
less than $500.
Yes. Yes. And so that was, and those are very practical things that are happening now.
Yeah, especially with blended families, especially with remarriages and second marriages and same-sex marriages, you know, those types of things, and people getting married later in life. You know, you've acquired so much up prior to that marriage, and then now all of a sudden, you know, you're married, and you may, let's say you're married for a short time and one passes away, all of your separate property that you acquired prior to that marriage goes to your family. It doesn't go to, or goes to your children. It doesn't go to your spouse. Your spouse is, you know, is not in line for that.
So, and again, now here's another thing that's sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When you have those type of situations, you might have, you know, blended families or remarriages later in life. A lot of times, they don't want, the parties don't want to think about it, and they don't want to talk about it. And they want to sort of stick their head in the ground and say, we got some hard decisions to make here. So we're not going to do it. And if they don't deal with
it,
and if they don't deal with it now, you're going to really cause a lot of chaos, incidentally, and enrich lawyers at the same time, with with trying to sort all this out. So, you know, these hard conversations have to occur, especially in those type of situations. Let's go to Paul. He's got a question regarding home ownership. Hey, Paul, you on All Things Legal with Doug Sincere and Albert Nico.
Good morning.
Hey, Paul, what you got, man? What you have?
Hey, y'all kind of answered my question. I just turned the radio on. I caught y'all last week, and I wanted to ask this question, but when I turned it on this morning, y'all talking about exactly what I wanted to know about the ownership. My father died without a will. I read up on it and the use of her and all of that. That answered my question, but my other part of my question was, I have two brothers who are deceased, one before my father died and one after my father died.
Yeah, the one that was deceased before your father died, did he have children?
Yes, two.
Okay.
So
they step up. They replace your
unless the will dictates otherwise by operation of law.
They will own half of a third.
It's by representation. They represent him in his portion. So if there's 10 of them, they split his portion
by
11.
10.
Okay.
11
wow.
Children of my father and mother.
I see.
So
there's not a whole lot to go around, right?
No.
That happened with me with nine of us, right? We had nine kids, and they died, you know, okay, you know, after all those years, but with the time you divided by nine, it wasn't a whole lot.
Right. But that's what our question is. The deceased brother prior to my father's death and the deceased brother after my father's death, so both of their children come into this
Yes, they do.
Okay, man, I appreciate it.
All right.
Well, so what will happen if one died after your dad died, then your dad's succession would technically go to that other sibling, and that other sibling would have to have a succession proceeding to send it to his kids, if that makes sense.
And you still got to do a succession even though there was no will, right?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Especially if there's there's a movable property, if there's real estate, you definitely need to, because that needs to be corrected in the public records as to who the proper owners are.
Yeah, that's all there is left is a house paid for. That's it, nothing else. My father's been dead a few years, and, you know, we have a brother that's supposed to be taken care of, but he's a procrastinator, and so I guess I'm going to have to take over. And my mother's still living, you know, but out of all the children, nobody's going to put her out of the house or anything. That's not going to happen.
Well, and I mean, you know what, realistically, you know, as long as you evaluate what the property is worth as of the time of your dad's death, you could really probably wait until mom dies, you know, if she's elderly.
Yeah.
And that, because, I mean, and then just you can do a succession of both at the same time.
You could do a double succession, yeah.
You know, it saved you a little money.
So it wouldn't hurt to wait until something.
In other words, you wouldn't have to do a succession unless your mother wanted to sell the property.
Right. If it's just your dad, it's just a house.
So, but she can't sell it though. If my father died without a will, it goes to the children, correct?
No, she still have to do succession.
Yeah, you'd have to do a succession to sell it. So you would have to do his succession to sell it. And look, she still can't sell it without the children's consent.
Consent, right?
Correct.
They'd all have to sign off on it.
Yeah, we were reading all about that. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah, and she may not want to sell it. She may not want to sell it if she wants to qualify for Medicaid to pay any nursing home expenses. She might want to keep that.
Which is another issue.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic. But we could talk maybe a little more about that in the other side of the break.
All right. Well, thanks. Okay, thanks for the call, Paul. Let's go to break. Doug Sincere, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. Doug Sincere, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We started talking about estate issues. And things, we talked about the lady who inherited a house early in her marriage, and her husband died, and she's getting kicked out.
Right.
Talk about something else that's sort of interesting. We're seeing a lot more, you'll see wills of people who, maybe a will was done in their 40s and 50s, and they bring it back to get it updated. But the difference is maybe they made a lot of most of their money in between the two wills. Where they might have a seven figure estate, substantial money, and you would see, and the will would say, if I pass, everything goes to my surviving spouse,
right?
And they might have three, four, or five children, and they'll say, I just want everything to go to my spouse.
We're going to leave it to each other.
That has a very profound implications. because people were living longer. And so the world's changing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. And this is, I'm not, you know, it's pretty close to accurate. I mean, I'm changing some of the facts just to protect.
Yeah, right.
To protect. But you might, we had a situation where you had a, I'll leave it at this, a professional
mm-hmm.
who amassed probably an estate that's close to eight figures.
Yeah.
So substantial. And he was married for 50-some-odd years, and his wife was a traditional wife. She started to raise the kids, stayed home, didn't need to work, mm-hmm. never did. And she died. And the will said everything goes to the surviving spouse.
Right.
Well, when you – a lot of men – I'm not going to be say all men, but a lot of men in their mid-80s, they want to be fed. They want to be dressed.
They want to be taken care of.
They want to be taken care of.
Much like the traditional spouse did for many, many years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so after being married for 50-some-odd years,
mm-hmm.
he's not your, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. He was lonely.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just lonely. And then he had a former employee who was about two-fifths of his age. Probably in the 30s or 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of started taking care of them, and then they decided to.
Next thing you know.
They're married.
Right.
After they're married.
A couple of blue pills later.
Blue pills later, some shots. Some shots from the, you know, he's in the office saying, I would like to give my entire estate to my new wife.
Mm-hmm.
And they have four children who will get zero.
Right.
And I don't think it was the intent when they were together for 55 years.
Of the wife
to have her portion go to the new wife.
Correct.
Because the new wife, if something happened to her, it would go to her family and would totally bypass the four children.
Exactly.
And what we do, we strongly recommend in all those situations is to do a lifetime usufruct where the surviving spouse can use the money for the rest of their life. They can use it
right.
as far as, and then they could, you know, if they want to downsize their house, they could use the money and
yeah.
maintain the money and use it to downsize and invest the rest of it.
Right.
Or
you can say, look, I'm going to leave it to you because the law will allow you to do it for life or do it until remarriage.
Right.
Or evidence of cohabitation, which is what I'll put in a yeah. will. Because in that way.
Do you put evidence of cohabitation or evidence of shacking up?
Well,
you
kind, use of, kind of the same thing. But anyway, but then what happens is, you know, if the husband's like, look, I want to, you know, again, traditional wife has never worked. I want her taken care of. So if she remarries, the assumption is whoever she marries will be able to take care of her. And so upon remarriage, then the kids will get it all. Otherwise, if she lives to 90, the kids are going to be in their late 60s and probably right. never need it or never use any of the money.
Right.
And so, you know, that way if she earlier in life, in her 50s or 60s, if he dies, then, you know, right. she remarries, then at least the children then can come into full ownership of his half.
Right.
Right.
So it's, and a lot of people think this will never happen to me. And it may not, but it does. The ones we have a lot in the file cabinets, our file cabinets, where it does, where oh, things that, unanticipate listen, that.
I have a client. Same type of thing happened. You know, the it was a wealthy family, and I'm not talking about a rich family. I'm talking about a wealthy right. New Orleans family, generational wealth. And it gets into the whole issue of forced heirship and, you know, whether you have to leave. Now, you know, and we were in law school and they started doing away with forced heirship. They
yes.
kept watering it down. Basically, if your child's under, you know, 24 years of age or not disabled, you could leave your property to whoever you wanted.
Wow.
And so there was a guy who had, yeah, who had all of this inherited wealth. And he married this woman. They had three kids. And he and the mom get divorced. Well, the kids are upset because now dad's, you know, in his late 60s and he's dating someone half his age. So we'll finish up after this. We'll take a phone call real quick.
Can we take, You want to take a call? Okay, let's take Ed real quick. We got to go to a break. Hey, all Ed, right. You're at All Things Legal.
You taking me, Ed?
I'm taking you, Ed, the pharmacist question. What's up, man?
Yeah, let me tell you. They had the lady that ran the pharmacy. They had $1 million in a paper bag, in paper bags.
I know.
And they had on the second floor of this place, right there on Caffin Avenue, and then...
It was on Chef Highway.
On Chef, yeah. And the husband was the cop.
Right.
That's why I didn't want to...
Yeah, his last name was Lucas.
Yeah.
I got a story about that, too. I indirectly represented her, and I'll tell that story right after the break.
All right, Ed. Thanks for the call. We got to go to a hard break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, you Weekend Lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. All right, we're back. We only got about a minute. On the other side, we got a text that asks us, what is our strangest case we ever had? You got one. You have one.
I've got one, and I'm going to tie it in with the Netflix episode, The Pharmacist.
Mine's going to be about the New Orleans Saints.
Okay.
And Jim Finks.
There you go.
So that's my, I don't want to say strangest case, but most counterintuitive case I've ever worked on. Mm-hmm. It was Bill Becknell I was just a young lawyer carrying Bill Becknell's briefcase at the time,
but I
might have done a little bit on it. So, all right, we're going to go to hour number two in All Things Legal. So stay tuned. We're going to national news. We're going to local news, and we'll be back in
about 10 minutes.
So stay tuned for hour number two. See you then.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.